हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे चार। So reading from Mahabharata by Krishna Dharma, Birth of the Kuru Elders, on page 11. Although Dhritarashtra was the eldest, his blindness disqualified him from becoming the king, nor could Vidura assume the throne, as he was born of a servant girl. But Pandu was a worthy monarch in every way, and when he came of age, he was installed on the Kuru throne. Pandu excelled all men in martial arts, and he was soon skilled in the Vedic science of leadership and diplomacy. And so the idea is that the king must be able to lead the people. It's not a matter of anyone who feels like it or, you know, just has that. They have to be able to take care of the people. They have to be able to protect the people. So unless they are, you know, physically fit, like Dhritarashtra is blind, he wouldn't be able to lead the army into battle. He won't actually be able to see what's going on. He's too dependent on his ministers, right? The king's independent. He can do things. He can also check himself. While Dhritarashtra, being blind, he can't. So that's why he's not supposed to be king. Not that it's discriminating if someone's blind, it's just they won't be able to do the job. It's just like, would you want a blind man driving you to the airport? You know? You can say, but he really, really wants to, you know. It's been his life's dream and all that, and so many people are getting in the way and creating so much difficulty for him and making him feel so bad. You know, we should, you know, please be kind and let him drive you to the airport. You know, so unless you have one of those Google cars, then don't bother, right? So the same ways, he won't be able to lead the kingdom. Not that he's not a nice guy, it's just that he's not really fit to be king. Then we have Vidura, because born of a servant girl, then the background and all that, he may not have those qualities to be able to push forward and do everything like that. Like you can see is that when push comes to shove, Then Karna, something comes up, he's insulted in that, he just comes forward more because of that Kshatriya nature, you know. And then with Duryodhana and like that, anything comes up, they rise up, Arjuna, like that. But you see Vidura later, when they say so many things about him and tell the leave, because he's so brahminical, you know, so sattvic, you know, so he just leaves. So then he's also then won't have that qualification. So it's not that, it means the materialist will take it from the external, that it's about the family heritage. But what's actually being taken is what kind of nature they have inherently and how well they themselves will be comfortable in that position under that pressure constantly. Right? Whatever your nature is, you can handle that pressure all the time. What is not your nature, of course, so many people can do so many things, but they have to have that nature. So the idea is that you have to see that. And we see that Pandu, he is qualified in everything. He excelled in the martial arts. He's skilled in the Vedic science of leadership, diplomacy. So he could do everything perfectly. He was the perfect king. All three brothers were given the best education and were raised with affection by Bhishma. So personal dealings, they're all treated exactly the same. It's just who's qualified for which service. That's the point. As predicted by Vyasadeva, Dhritarashtra displayed immense bodily strength, and Vidura was naturally wise even from childhood. His devotion to religion and morality could not be matched by anyone, right? So he'll be perfect as an advisor, someone to set that example in this, but to run the kingdom, that's not what his business is, because you see, he would run it without all the standard politics. And the point is, since you're working in a political field, people tend to be political. So you have to be comfortable in that area. Now, if he's not responsible, he can deal. You see, he's from that background, so he can function in that background. So that's why you see with time, he'll become the prime minister. But at the same time, it's not what he would prefer to do. Right? When he reached maturity, even the learned Bhishma would seek his counsel. Right? Because Bhishma is the best at the time. He knows the best how to do everything and has the most experience. But he'll ask Vidura. Right, so that's an important, is that someone like Bhishma, even though he's the best, he's the, you know, the most powerful Kshatriya that's there on the planet, he has the greatest experience from the greatest background, running the biggest kingdom and all that, he's doing it without attachment, you know, so many good qualities. But still you must take advice. That's one important thing of leadership, is that you always have to take advice. Because you're going to see something, you're going to want to do something by your experience and everything, but others are also seeing other angles you may not be focusing on, right? If you're focusing on, let's say, a particular arrangement, you know, let's say an economic arrangement, you'll just look at that. Let someone also point out other aspects, or you're looking at the personal aspect, and then they'll point out other aspects. So when you're leading, you'll be focusing on certain things. You try to make as much balance as you can, but by hearing from others, then you're going to get a more complete picture. That's leadership. If someone tries to lead everything on their own, micromanage it, that's not actually leadership. So we see is here, the greatest of leaders, they would take advice. That's just the way it goes. But the people they were taking advice from wasn't just anybody. It was those who were the most qualified, who had an equal... How good they were at leadership, these persons were that good at advising. So then it's a proper match, right? The Veda is always about that balance, that match. It was thus that one day Bhishma approached Vidura and said, "O wise one, we should take steps to ensure that our noble line does not again face extinction. Two princes are ready for marriage. I have heard that there are three princesses worthy of being allied to our house. Tell me your thoughts on this, gentle Vidura." Right, so they come of age, they want to they get married, they take up the responsibilities, and then having doing that, then the family line is there, they've established. Means, why is Bhishma running? Because there's no one to follow after, because he took this vow of celibacy. So then, and he can't sit on the throne. He can manage things from the background, but someone else has to sit on the throne. So there's a difficulty there that they don't have someone to run. So he wants to see that doesn't come up again. So by them getting married, them having children, then they continue on the management and that perfect management to take care of the people and that. Then their sons will be trained. They will carry on like this. And this way, then the people will be protected. Because for the Kshatriya, protection of the people, that's the most important aspect. Bhishma said that there was a princess in the Yadu kingdom named Kunti, another named Gandhari, who was a daughter of the mountain king Suvala, and a third princess named Madri in the southern land of Madra. You know, so that'd be in Madras. And the mountain means on the other side, you know, around the area now where it'd be Afghanistan. He suggested that two of these girls could be sought for Pandu and the other for Dhritarashtra. Vidura folded his hands and replied, "My lord, you are our father, protector and preceptor. You should do whatever you feel is proper for the welfare of our dynasty." So one, he's being humble and all that, but two, it means that he sees nothing wrong in this. So because he's come up with this idea, let's go with that idea. It's not that now Vidura has to then say the same thing again and make it his. It's just a matter, he's made a good point, it's perfect, you know, you should do as you see best. Bhishma sat and thought. He had heard that Gandhari had received a boon from Shiva, who had said she would have 100 sons. Surely she would make a good wife for Dhritarashtra, who had also been blessed in a similar way by Vyasadeva. Right? So Vyasadeva gave him a blessing. He would have 100 sons. She has a blessing. She'll have 100 sons. It's a proper match. Right? They're both Kshatriyas. They're both like this. They're both a nice qualification of level and background and character. Because you want to have a nice match. Otherwise, you have one who just wants a single child and the other one wants 100. There's going to be a problem here. But they both have the natural tendency for 100 children. 100 sons from that powerful prince would be a great asset to the kingdom and would ensure the perpetuation of the Kuru dynasty. Right? 100 sons, somebody's going to be able to run things. Bhishma at once arranged for messengers to go to Suvala and ask for the hand of Gandhari. When King Suvala heard Bhishma's request, he was hesitant. How could his daughter marry a blind prince? But Suvala reflected on the possibility. Dhritarashtra belonged to the glorious Kuru house. They had ruled the world for thousands of years. Because the Kuru line is in the Sun Dynasty, and they're coming down, and their line, when we see Arjuna talking about the forefathers going back to Yadu, and that means it's been unbroken. They've been ruling the earth for so many, you know, thousands of years. Considering the fame, nobility, and virtue of the Kurus, Suvala assented to the marriage. Right? Because they're famed because, not because they're doing something wrong, because they're doing something right. Right? And what was the other? Fame, nobility, just the character that they have. You see so many of them. They are noted for great character, you know, great deeds, great amazing things that they've done. So that's there. And then the virtue that they personally have, good qualities. They themselves run their life in a very nice way. So then he ascended to the marriage, because right, his daughter should marry. She's from a nice, noble Kshatriya background, then who she marries should be. He had his son Shakuni bring Gandhari to Hastinapur. When the princess heard that she was to marry the blind Dhritarashtra, she took a cloth and bound her own eyes, not wanting to be in any way superior to her lord. So Gandhari therefore then wanted to see this is in that way. It's not a matter of, oh, the girl has to be, you know, less or anything. Girls want their husband to be stronger than them, in a better position, because then there's something to always strive for. There's something that so there's always that aspect where they're trying to be better. But if they can't, that means the relationship can just keep continuing. But if it's like, with a little effort, she can be equal to or better than her husband, like that, then, you know, what more is to do in the relationship? So you always have to have that aspect that is going like this. So it's a psychological aspect that is just, you always have. They're always trying to get the upper hand, and the husband, by how he deals, he's able to always, you know, impress her that he's doing well. And so then she feels very satisfied. So that's why here, then, Gandhari doesn't want to be in any position that'll be stronger, because then you know, you don't have the proper natural feelings of affection. Shakuni gave away his beautiful sister to Dhritarashtra, along with many gifts sent by Suvala. After being duly respected by Bhishma, he then mounted his golden chariot and returned to his kingdom. Gandhari became immediately devoted to her husband. She pleased him in every way by her attentions. She never even referred to other men in her speech, and a silk cloth always covered her eyes. Right, so she's known as one of the five main, Panchasati or something like this, within the universe, in history, she's one of the main women who is considered the most chaste. They're just so focused on the relationship, cultivating the relationship, like that. So, you know, they set the example, and then all of the ladies, and they establish themselves to do their best in this way, and so that's considered proper, appropriate. But they, you know, so they have to be so unique that it sets an example, like that. So she's one of them. With Dhritarashtra married, Bhishma turned his mind to Pandu's marriage, right? Because he had to get them both married. So now he's arranged Dhritarashtra, he's the eldest, so the eldest brother gets married first. And so then now that he's married, now he can turn to Pandu. He had heard that the princess Kunti would soon select her husband at a special ceremony known as a Swayamvara. That princess was famous for her beauty and womanly qualifications, and she belonged to the noble Yadu race, from whom had come many great heroes. Bhishma told Pandu to leave at once for the Swayamvara and try to win Kunti's hand. Right. So here, in this case, as a Kshatriya, she's having a Swayamvara, so his arrangement for the marriage then means she has a Swayamvara. He needs to go and win her hand. Right? Because if he is so qualified in that, then he should be able to do that, right? So Bhishma is seeing who's there, seeing the qualification, and then seeing that Pandu could do this. Because the point is, the girl also, in the Swayamvar, he needs to impress her. Right? Whatever's set as the challenge or whatever's the position, you need to impress. Because you're dealing with Kshatriya princess, she's very qualified, she knows what the standard is. Like you see Gandhari, she's trained, she knows the standard. And so she immediately then acts in that way. So in the same way with Kunti, she at the time was the most qualified girl for marriage in India. Right? Because Gandhari is already married, like that. And so Kunti is the other one. So that means the whole of, just like you see Rukmini, you know, everybody wanted to marry her, or Draupadi, everyone wanted to marry her. That means it's not just a regional thing, it's the whole, you know, they all want to marry her, that qualification. So Kunti was of that kind of position. And so then someone of that position, they need someone to impress her. So then that's why the princes come forward and do their best. The king mounted a great dark stallion and rode swiftly to the kingdom of Kunti Bhoja. The father of Kunti, like a proud lion, he strode into the Swayamvar arena. When the many other kings assembled there saw Pandu, broad-chested and with eyes like a furious bull, they considered him to be a second Indra. He outshone all the other monarchs like the sun rising in the morning and obscuring the stars. When Kunti saw the powerful Hastinapur monarch gazing at her, her mind became agitated. There could be no one else for her. Trembling with emotion, she walked slowly towards him and shyly placed the nuptial garland around his neck. Right, so they would check, means all of them would do whatever is the task, either just by being there, or by, you know, we see with Arjuna, then there's some kind of task that's there. Then once it's established who's the best, then she goes out with the garland, puts the garland. Like that. And so he's chosen. Then they'll have the marriage arrangement. Like that. So we see here is then the leader of the Sun Dynasty, and then the most qualified girl in the Moon Dynasty, and then, you know. Yes. So here it says the eyes like a bull. So Kshatriya is very powerful, and their gaze is very strong. But the point is, Kshatriya women, they can handle that. For them, it's inspiring. Others may be afraid, might be too rough. You know, like this, or too powerful, but for a Kshatriya woman, then, you know, it's good. Although many kings and princes desired Kunti's hand, and even though a Swayamvar would almost always end in a fight, everyone abandoned any thought of competing with the mighty Pandu for the princess. Right? Because someone comes because it's a little bit better, they kind of see him, oh, he's not that much better. So then they all start a fight, to, you know, just because of their egos. But Pandu outshone them all so greatly that they didn't even bother. They just knew he's the best. So they didn't even start a fight. Because he went there alone, we see. He didn't even go with his armies. The others all come with their armies and this and that. He just came alone. Mounting on their steeds and chariots, they simply returned the way they had come. Right? So just again, they just went. You know, so they don't stay around and laugh and joke. They just go. Because, you know, that mode of passion, they're... You know, it's either something's happening or, you know, it's not, and then they leave. King Kunti Bhoja came down from the royal platform into the arena, his face bright with delight. What better match was there for his daughter? The king immediately arranged for the wedding ceremony, and he presented Pandu with gifts of great wealth. After a few days, the couple left for Hastinapur, accompanied by a large retinue bearing many colorful pennants that waved in the breeze, right? So you have, there's always that preliminary aspect where the boy's there at the house, and then, you know, any preliminary things and all that are there. Then the marriage day is there. Then after the marriage, so they're there a few days before, then they're married, and they stay a few days after marriage. Then after that, then they go back to the boy's house. So a marriage ceremony generally would be a week-long program. The preliminaries, the marriage, and then the days afterwards. And so in that way, then you would have, how you say? Yeah, you would have the families, you know, can see like this, because it's one thing, the girl's part of the household, but once she's married, she's technically not part of the household. So now it's a whole different flavor that's there. And then now this boy is just a boy, but now he's actually a member of the family. So then now, does that make sense? So the boy becomes a member of the family, and the girl is now the member of his family. So there's a whole different flavor. So that's why then they would have these kind of arrangements. It's not just come in, have the ceremony, disappear, and it doesn't matter. The soldiers beat drums and blew loudly upon their conch shells as they proceeded towards Pandu's capital. Seated with Kunti upon a shining golden chariot and surrounded by Brahmins offering benedictions, Pandu entered Hastinapur in state. Right, so he came in as the king with all the royal things. And all. But this is all coming from the father-in-law. He's arranged all this, right? Because then he wants to, means the son is on that level. He wants to show on this level. And at the same time, by this, how does his daughter come? Right? Because if the father had given, she'd just ride back on the horse with Pandu. But so she's arranged all these things. So you see in these kind of arrangements where there's gifts at the wedding, they're actually for the benefit of the daughter, coming from the girl's father. But it's not that it doesn't have an effect in the overall, you know, how you say, arrangements between themselves, that these things add to the possessions that are there in the kingdom and that, but it's actually for her benefit, for her glory. So then he comes in state with his girl, right? He just rode off on a horse. He comes back in state. So he sees, you know. Bhishma was overjoyed to see Pandu married to the gentle and beautiful princess, right? Because he's already checked and thought this is the best princess. But he had to go there himself and establish himself, right? Because if someone else arranges, then that's nice. But for Kshatriyas, they have to establish, like we said, the girl wants to see the husband as something special. So he comes in himself. He impresses himself on his own merit. And so then that's the range. So it's a Kshatriya thing. Then you see is then they have the Brahma rite where then the father gives away the girl and all that. But there's that initial having to impress. And once that's there, then you do the normal marriage ceremony. Bhishma is over to see Pandu married to the gentle and beautiful princess. But he also felt that the king needed another queen. Although Gandhari had received the benediction that she would bear 100 sons, Kunti had no such boon. Bhishma wanted to ensure that the virtuous monarch was blessed with powerful sons. He went personally to the kingdom of Madra to seek the hand of Madri for Pandu. She was under the protection of her brother, King Shalya. Right, so by having the kings themselves, by there being more wives, then you have the more sons, so you can see that the dynasty goes on, because there's always going to be different things. You know, there's disease, there's war, there's different things like that. You know, some of them turn out, they take up the Brahminical mood and like that, like Maharaj Rishabdev. Yes, he had 100 sons. Of those 100 sons, then I think, what is it, like 80 of them were Brahmins. They took up Brahminical activities like that. 11 of them were Paramahamsas, so they were even beyond that. They're the nine Yogendras. And then the balance, I think 11, they were Kshatriyas. So out of 100 sons, 11 of them took it out. So you have to consider all these things. And so for the kings, then you have this. Also, you have the aspect, there's two wives, then one of them doesn't get too much control. And that, and so then you get more of a balance. So then the affairs of the kingdom go on more smoothly and everything. Shalya received with all honor Bhishma and his retinue of ministers. So this one, because the second one, the first one was a Swayamvar, so he had to go do it himself, Pandu. But the second one, there's no Swayamvar. Therefore, then Bhishma can make the arrangement, like he made with Gandhari. There wasn't a Swayamvar. Therefore, he can send his men and that, or go himself in this case, and then discuss and all that, and make an alliance. But because Kunti was having a Swayamvar, because everyone wanted to marry her, therefore then he had to go himself. Shalya received with all honor Bhishma and his retinue of ministers, Brahmins and Rishis, right? Because generally they go like this in a group. He brought Ganga's son to his place and offered him a seat of white ivory studded with precious gems. Right? Ganga's son means Bhishma Dev. Then the king bathed his feet and offered him respectful worship, right? Because he's a greater king. He's a very bigger king. His reception completed, Bhishma said to King Shalya, "Mighty monarch, you should know that I am here to seek a maiden." Right, because that's the whole thing, is that when you're dealing in these things, and the Kshatriya, what is the business at hand? They say that first. or the Brahmin, when you're talking knowledge, he says, what's his point first? You know, this is what we're going to discuss. This is a question on the nature of the soul. Then they can give their whole spiel on how, what they're looking for and all the different considerations, but they let you know what it is. Just like here, he says, firstly, I've come here, you know, for seeking the hand of a maiden. Then he's going to then he's going to discuss anything else. So it's very, very clear. Does that make sense? So while you see sometimes people, they start here and then there, and you don't know where they're going, and after 5 minutes, you're confused. So Brahmin Kshatriyas were very, very clear what the practical point is or what the philosophical point. They'll say it, and then they'll deal. I have heard that you have an illustrious and chaste sister, and I would choose her for King Pandu. Please tell me if you approve of this arrangement. Right, so this is what it's about, so he knows what he's thinking about, so he doesn't have to be anything. Then he says that, I have heard that you have an illustrious chaste sister. Then he understands, okay, he's talking about my sister, like that. And then he says, then, the connection with Maharaj Pandu. Right, so then, okay, so, maiden, my sister, and for King Pandu, like that. And so now, do you approve of this? Very straightforward, but you see, very cultured. That's the thing in the Vedic, is you can be straightforward and be cultured. Kind of the modern concept, if you're straightforward, means you're gross, you're blunt, you're not considering the refinements of personal dealings. But we see the Vedic was how to be straightforward and maintain culture. King Shalya replied that he would be greatly honored to be allied with the Kurus, right? Because they're the main leaders within the Sun dynasty. They've been the emperors. From what I understand, Madri is also Sun dynasty, like that. But they'll be lesser kings. There was, however, an ancient custom in his family that no girl could be given in marriage unless the suitor offered a tribute. Right. So that was, for them, this is, it has that element that it looks like it's an asura marriage, where they're paying money and for the getting the girl. But this is not, this is a tribute to the family, that you're respecting them, because they are Kshatriyas, they have their position, and you're willing to respect them for their position, so that there's a tribute. And so then naturally, then the bigger the family that's approaching, the bigger the tribute, you know, because they're going to show themselves, because they're a great family, another great family, so they have to have that proper connection. Bhishma had already heard of this custom, which dated back to the great Brahma himself. He had come prepared and replied to Shalya, "There is no fault in this custom, and it has been approved by the self-born creator, Lord Brahma." Right, so when the Kshatriyas practice it, it's not the Asura marriage, like that. It's not a matter of money. This is a matter of respect. Therefore, please accept the gifts that I have brought in exchange for the princess. Bhishma's men then carried in heaps of gold coins, pearls, corals, and gems of various colors, and set them before Shalya. Bhishma also presented the kings with hundreds of elephants, horses, and chariots. Shalya received all the wealth with delight, with a delighted heart, because that just means they value the girl. Right? So that means they're willing to give so much tribute and so much respect that means they're going to, they properly understand the position of the girl. They also, that means they're respecting the family, they're respecting the girl, right? And so then it's a very nice thing. You can see here, it's all attitude. It's not the technique that's used, it's the attitude. He gave Madri to Bhishma, who soon returned to Hastinapur and performed the wedding ceremony, right? So then by this, she went back to Hastinapur. They had the wedding there, like that. Like you see, like also with Gandhari, she came to that place. So it depends on the arrangement. So there, sometimes they go there, sometimes they come here. Pandu established each of his wives in their own splendid palaces and gave himself up to enjoyment with them both. Right, so this whole point of the idea, have many wives, be fun and all this, but the point is each has to have her own complete place that's not dependent upon the other wife. It has to be fully independent, that she herself has her own scene that she's in control of that has no bearing on the other wife. That's the position. So that's why you see kings might have more than one wife. A general person wouldn't do, because he has his place and then he'll want to have the all, you know, both wives in the same place. No, they have to have their own completely separate arrangement. Okay. He sported in the palace groves and gardens, appearing like a celestial with two beautiful consorts. Yeah, so then he's established them in their own places, and they have wonderful arrangements in the groves and the palaces. So as kings, they have really wonderful facility. And he spends the time with them, and they, you know, they get to know each other. They get to spend the time and everything as newlyweds and that. And so it went really, really nicely for them. So we see here then, this ends this chapter, you know, establishing the marriage, the background, and the marriage of the Kurus. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.